Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Here we go.
Here's John Williams.
Yep, that's me. I'm back. Happy to be back, and also happy I took yesterday off. I'll be honest with you. I looked at the calendar on Friday, and I said to the people here, can I get Monday off, too? And they said, sure, John, take Monday off. And so there I was with a very long three-day weekend. It's my Monday. It's your Tuesday. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We will be here until 3. Thanks for joining us. By the way, so now I'm a little out of the loop, right? Because last time I talked on this radio station was Friday. That's when Hurricane Irma was bearing down on us. And I had to laugh and appreciate Darlene Glanton's column in the Chicago Tribune today about the coverage. Brenda and I watched it as much as you did Saturday and Sunday and Monday. And I even tweeted over the weekend that I thought CBS's, well, all of them, CNN actually was the one I tweeted about. I thought that CNN's coverage was pretty laughable. It was the classic reporter standing in harm's way saying, this is dangerous, don't stand here. And Darlene Glanton in the Tribune at the end of her piece said, it's ironic that the people who would have benefited from the display of the hurricane's power didn't have electricity. They probably weren't watching CNN on their phones to know what was out their back door. So it wasn't to help anybody. It was just to dramatize the power of the storm. And there was one time where Anderson Cooper was, you know, he's anchoring his coverage in the rain. It's raining on him. He's got a bit of a slicker on, but not too much. And it's raining on him as he's doing his anchored report, going to reporters in the field and then talking and making observations. They have umbrellas at CNN. All they had to do was put an umbrella over him, and then it would not have been raining on him. But that would have been less dramatic now, wouldn't it? Darlene points out that there was one time where a reporter said, you know, the winds are very strong here, and he's in a very strong wind. He says, now I could step behind this wall, and then the wind's not so bad. And the wind sort of eases on the other side of the wall. So that was a sort of graphic demonstration of how strong the wind was and wasn't. But then to continue his work, he steps back out from the wall back into the wind and the rain because that's more powerful and awesome. And I understand that the way to convey to other human beings what the weather is really like is to put a human being in it. You can't tell from a stop sign what it feels like. But at some point, it just became bad acting. And I had to roll my eyes, particularly since, if you think about it, not only did they sort of get the storm surge part wrong, and the coast wrong. It was a terrible storm, devastating. People died. Lives were ruined. People will still be picking up the pieces for years, and it's going to cost governments billions of dollars. So I'm not downplaying the significance of it. But it also seemed like as it was happening, the only information they had was, wow, it's really raining and windy, and the storm surge is coming. If you got a different message other than those three things over the course of the weekend, you were evidently watching a different channel than me. We'll talk in our 2 o'clock hour with Sam Panionovich just a little bit about sports. We like to check in with him on the first of the week after a weekend. I was gone yesterday. But he pointed out in a tweet himself, Sam Panionovich did, that you know how Jostens, or is it Jostens, the people that make the World Series and class rings, they had a raffle, I think it was $25 or $200 to get in, and then they were going to give one of the actual big, real World Series rings to the person that wins the raffle. Steve, did you see the winning number in the World Series raffle that they did to get the World Series ring? The winning number was 001907. If you had that ticket, you won the ring. 1907 was the winning ring. 1907, prior to last year, was the year that the Cubs had previously won the World Series. It had been 108 seasons, famously so. I think that's pretty amazing. That's pretty awesome. If you were going to be able to select a number, which you weren't, but you'd say, I'll take ticket number, I don't know, 1907. That's the year they won it last. That's the ticket that won. Sam poo-pooed that. I thought it was kind of awesome. He thinks they're more doing what the president does sometimes, and that is distracting you with this shiny object when you should be paying attention to the other shiny object, which was getting swept by the Brewers. Sam in the 2 o'clock hour. Oh, one other note. So today, I sold the typewriter. We had an old vintage manual typewriter that we had with us in Minnesota. We displayed it in our home. It's functional, but we don't use it to type. We just sort of put it with some books, and it was for display purposes only. And when we moved, we thought, well, maybe we'll find room for it. So you pack it up and you move it, and then you find it, you unpack it, and then you kind of lug this heavy typewriter around the new condo and realize there's no place for it. And then what are you going to do? Give it to the Salvation Army? I know. I'll put it on Craigslist. So then I put it in the car, and I drove it down to the radio station. Thought maybe I'd sell it here. And then finally, somebody on Craigslist says, hey, I'll buy that for you for the $25 you're asking. $25. Probably paid, I don't know, 50 for it, maybe 40. So I got some of my money back. But my point is, Steve, it was a lot of effort to have that thing there, get it here, and sell it. And to say nothing of, you know, you go online and you create a price and you take the picture and you... The account lapsed. I know. And then the 7 days were up, so then I had to repost it. And
I love those things. I would have given you 50 for it.
Don't do that to me.
It was 75. Who knows?
Actually, we were in...
Was it black?
I'm not going to talk to you like that. But we were on this antique shop on Belmont yesterday, and the lady had a bunch of antique typewriters in there, and hers were selling for like hundreds. And I'm like, oh, crap, I just gave mine away for 25.
Yeah, she buys them on Craigslist for $25.
I'll bet she does. And so you come to a point where you say, that's okay, I'm mostly here to get rid of it. And $25 and getting rid of it is, you know, two birds with one stone. But then... When I finally met the couple in their car in front of the Tribune Tower, they pull up. I run out with this big old typewriter, hand it to it through the car window. They give me a 20 and a 5. And I've consummated the deal. And it feels pretty rewarding, all that effort. And I've done it. I got rid of the typewriter, and I have $25. And suddenly that felt like $25 I don't want to spend now. In fact, I thought, wow, I got $25. I'll go grab some coffee. Maybe I'll get a salad. But then I thought, wait a minute, all of this? All
you're going to effort for a eat, cup of coffee.
You're going to eat and drink it before you get back into the building? What, are you nuts? No, save that. That's, dang, son, that was some work. But I have no trouble taking $25 out of my account with my debit card. $25 is $25. It's all still the same pool. But for some reason, this $20 bill and $5 bill feels... I don't know.
I kind of like that. Well, you worked harder for it.
I really did. Harder than I'm working now telling you the story. And by the way, I'm getting paid more than $25 to tell you about this. But that $25 felt, I don't know, maybe it was the tangible value of labor. But you hated to spend it. I thought, I'll save this someday. But, you know, really, this, in a way, that doesn't make sense.
So now put the 20 and the 5 in a frame. It takes up less space than where you would have put the typewriter.
I don't know if you can relate, but that was just a novel experience for me, working and actually having cash as a result. The president on Friday tweeted the following: churches in Texas should be entitled to reimbursement from FEMA relief funds for helping victims of Hurricane Harvey, just like others. I'm not sure what he means by just like others. Other hurricanes or other institutions that get helped by FEMA. But the president tweeted, quote, churches in Texas should be entitled to reimbursement from FEMA relief funds for helping victims of Hurricane Harvey just like others. I guess others are helping Hurricane Harvey. Community centers, I don't know, individual citizens, they're eligible for relief funds. Churches should also be eligible for FEMA funds, said the president. Boy, did that blow up the internets. What do you think about that? Here's my number, 312-981-7200. I'll pause. You call. This is your turn, 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Some of you are saying, hey, John, you got that 1907, 1908, 100 and 708 thing wrong. So I'm going back to Sam Paniashvili's tweet here. Hold on a second. says here, Dateline Chicago, the Chicago Cubs announced Janine Dietz, a resident of Wilmette, former game day usher of 10 seasons and a lifelong Cubs fan, won the Cubs Charities World Series ring raffle. Ironically, for more than 25,000 raffle tickets sold, I think that's where I had 25 bucks in my head, Dietz randomly selected winning ticket number 1907. 1907 corresponds with the year of the team's first World Series championship.
That's when I said, okay, that's enough.
2016 World Series ring offered through this raffle was donated by the company, and it's the first... It's the only player-grade version available for fans. What's enough? What's the matter?
Didn't they, when they, I love the Cubs, but when they, you know, and they were so generous with all of their, the rings and different things they gave to everyone. I mean, incredibly generous.
Yeah.
But they said, and then coincidentally, it came out to 1,907. Yeah. Wasn't there something like that?
Yeah, right, exactly.
And now this raffle ticket winner, not
now,
that I think
but the
it was
raffle
fixed.
Ticket thing, 1907, that's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool, I know, but it's
suspiciously
just,
cool?
No, I'm not suspicious of it. It's just, okay.
Sam thinks that it's so utterly besides the point.
Where's he from?
He's a Southsider. He's a Southside guy. Who knows what hurricane number 3 is going to be like, but you had Harvey and Irma, the untold devastation in Texas and Florida and the Keys and so forth, some of the U.S. properties. So should we give federal FEMA funds, your tax dollars, to churches in Texas? The president tweeted over the weekend, churches in Texas should be entitled to reimbursement from FEMA relief funds for helping victims of Hurricane Harvey just like others. I don't think they should because they don't pay taxes. I mean, I hate to, you know, just be so monetary about it. What's the word? Mercenary about it. But if you don't pay in, then I don't care if you're a church or a hardware store, then you shouldn't get it coming out.
The small businesses that are getting benefits are taxpaying businesses.
Taxpaying businesses. And if you don't pay in, I mean, that's the joy. That's the joy of being a church, among other things. But you're doing it because you're Christ-like or whoever you follow. It's
a charitable break.
And it saves you a lot of money. Why do you think a lot of people want to be a church? So, well, I'm a church. We pray to the mosquito nets in our backyard, and it's a sanctuary, and therefore we're not paying people. One of the great advantages of being a religion, by the way, is that you don't have to pay taxes in the country you're in if it's the United States. Saves you a lot of money. A lot of money. How do you think some of those TV preachers get so rich? They're not paying taxes there. So if you're not paying taxes in, then, and so say your church was devastated. Say your church got wiped out. Then I think you turn to the parishioners or your savings or your insurance. You can have insurance and you just figure it out. You're not in the business to make money. You're not even in the business to break even. If you're a church, you're in the business to just, I'm a Catholic, right? Or was raised a Catholic. You're in business to do Christ's work. You know. WWJD and all of that. So I'm sorry. I sure appreciate what you're doing, and I hope you keep doing it, but I don't think you get any money at all. Ron's in Rockford. You're on WGN. What do you want to say, Ron?
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you that churches are in the business of doing God's work, and I think that's their focus. But, you know, part of that focus is obviously helping folks in times of need. And while... You know, you made the comment that they don't pay taxes. I guess I would kind of wonder how many of the other organizations that are providing services and help are nonprofits as well. I would imagine a significant portion of those are, nonprofit organizations as
right.
well, and they don't pay taxes either.
Right, if you're a 501c3. You know what, and that's an interesting point. I'm glad you called about that because, Ron, it's not that you're a nonprofit, although churches technically are, it's that you're religious.
Right.
So if we are the Community Association of Inglewood, then we're right. That's not a religion, that's just a nonprofit organization. We get reimbursed, but the church doing the same business down the street doesn't because
right.
they're religious Well, all right, I'm going to make you in charge of relief funds when I get to be king, Ron. Do churches get the money, Ron? Yes or no?
Well, you know, I think it varies. It depends, but I would say so because, you know, churches are also a civil organization and provide, you know, at least theoretically, provide benefits to the community.
Yep.
You know, some may argue one way or another, but, you know, and it might not just be Christian churches. I'm sure there's a number of Muslim organizations that are doing great things and Jewish organizations doing great things.
Mosques and, doing the same thing?
Know, well, I'd say, you know, helping in this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a shame that we would discriminate against those folks for their religion, simply because they're trying to do the same thing that, say, like you said, the Inglewood Community Center might do.
Yeah, well, yeah, make an interesting point. Ron, thank you for the phone call.
John, they're not reimbursing them for the help they provide people, right? They would be reimbursing them for their losses.
Right.
Right? So if their building, their church flooded, would they get reimbursement like the drugstore would? I think that's what we're talking about, right?
Absolutely. For instance, one church, the First Assembly of God in Texas, I think it was, well, it was probably in Houston, right, lost its steeple, roof, and church van. So the church van got wiped out in the floods in Houston. They want the government to pay for the new van. By the way, in some of these instances in the past, the federal government has reimbursed churches. But you know what they do? They say, okay, was the part that was damaged for religious purposes or non-religious, secular purposes? So if it's a daycare that the community uses at the church, then in theory, FEMA could reimburse the church for the daycare. I think that's a shell game, because if you help them in one area, they'll just take the funds from another area and put it there. You know, you can move things around. If it's money in, it's money in. And I'm not sure money should go in at all. But what they said in the past is, if the money goes to an area that the church had that was non-religious, then they will help them pay for it. Seems to me like the steeple, I don't know, you're not doing much there, but it is sort of the apex, if you will, of the religious experience. It's the religious symbol, if nothing else. You know, the cross and all that up there. Let's talk to Lisa. You're on WGN. Should they get some FEMA funds, Lisa? What do you say? Lisa, I'll come back to you. I'll go to Mike. Hey, Mike, this is John. You're on WGN.
Hey, good afternoon, John. One little hole, I think, in using the excuse not to support the churches because they don't pay taxes, a lot of the people that they're helping are very poor and probably are not paying taxes also. So that's my argument against what you said.
Maybe so. Yeah, I think the big problem is the religious element, though. You know, it's not who's paying taxes and who's not, although, let's face it, churches don't pay taxes, but the reason that they don't is because they're religious organizations.
Well, let me add this, too. In a week and a half, I'm going down to Houston with a bunch of people. We're sleeping on the floor of a church and going to people's houses that were flooded and helping them tear out the drywall and the carpet and all the mud that was in there.
Yeah, this all sounds so uncharitable on our part. So I'm going to put you know, the other guy that I put in charge of relief efforts when I get to be king, I just fired him. It's you now, Mike. When you're when I'm king and you're in charge, are we going to give FEMA funds to the churches?
Yes, especially if they're helping.
Hey, thanks for the call, Mike. I really appreciate you listening.
All right.
And by the way, thank you for doing the work you're doing. That's, at the end of the day, what we all need to do is just one another help each other. Thanks for doing that, Mike.
You're welcome. Good night.
Have a good day. You bet. It's 129. Lots of calls on this. Also, I want to talk after the news with David Bernstein, who wrote the piece in Chicago Magazine about Blagojevich in jail. It's really interesting, particularly how Patty and the kids are handling it all. And just, you know, the sentence that guy got. It's a fascinating story. It's the October cover story in Chicago Magazine. Phil Rogers over at Channel 5 is doing a piece, I guess, on it too. Blago, His Life in Prison, Chicago Magazine, starts David Bernstein's story this way. Rod Blagojevich's first summer in prison, he recalls, was quite an awakening. From June through July of that year, the city endured 13 days above 100 degrees. 2 days reached 105, a temperature not seen in the area since 1878. The facility didn't have air conditioning either, he continues. The heat was oppressive. Sleeping in that heat was almost impossible to cool down. He employed a prison trick. He emptied out the contents of the plastic bag of his cereal that he had purchased from the commissary and filled it with ice right before evening lockdown. I eagerly and embrace that cold bag of ice to try to sleep, in much the same way you would hug a hot water bottle in the wintertime. Much of the story is about simply what prison is like. Towards the end of the story, as the story goes on, you find out more about how Patty and the kids are doing, and you get more of his attitude about whether or not he should even be there. David Bernstein wrote the piece, and it really is fascinating. And I think the Chicago Tribune editorial today is really good, too. In the editorial, the Trib says, hey, all you politicians, read this. Read this. It's not, David, it's not pleasant. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, it's Devin. Hi, John. It's it's not Club Fed, that's for sure.
Well, you asked him that specifically, didn't you?
Right.
And yeah, what did he say?
That's how I started. That was the first question. He said, "No, this is prison. This is he's at a work camp, which is different. So he started out at a low security facility, which is they call it, what the slang there is behind the fence or behind the razor wire. So there are tall walls, razor wire fencing, cells, limited movement. It's prison." Where he is now is a work camp where he's got a considerable amount more freedom. So there are no walls. So, prisoners can kind of, it's sort of the honor system. He lives in actually a converted motel. So there's actually think about like a basic motel with, so there's a tub and he shares a room with four other people, but there's like a bathtub and a normal motel room. Carpeted floors, that sort of thing.
Well, I think what was particularly telling in your story was it's not necessarily the conditions, although, it could be worse, it could be a lot better, but really the essence of prison isn't where you're staying, it's where you're not staying. He's lonely, he's isolated, he's going to get out in 24, he'll be 78 years old?
68
years old?
He went in as a 55-year-old, and he'll be out at 68.
Yeah. His exit day is May of 2024. You note in the story that this is where Timothy McVeigh, Terry Nichols, Jeffrey Skilling, Jared Fogle, Jared of Subway Sandwich, and other fame.
Yes, yeah. Jared's there now. He's in the they're in different facilities now. So Rod is in the work camp, and Jared is in the low security prison right now. But they're next door to each other. This is a prison that has had a lot of prominent inmates over the years. Actually, at one point, Rod wasn't even the highest elected official in the prison. It was the president of Guatemala.
I shouldn't laugh. I mean, but here's the thing. So I'm reading the piece, and I'm torn at times between having compassion for the governor, because I personally think his sentence is too long, and no compassion at all. I want to read a paragraph that you wrote to you and then let you comment. There have been heartbreaking moments, such as during last year's World Series. Blagojevich is a diehard Cubs fan, and the team had long been something he and his older daughter Amy bonded over. So Patty brought Amy a ticket to Denver, where Governor Blagojevich was being incarcerated, so that she could watch Game 3 with her dad on TV. One problem, the correctional officer in charge that month of the camp's cafeteria, which doubles as the visiting area, had a no-TV policy. Recalls Patty, Rod even went to him because I had already bought the ticket and asked him, my daughter bought a ticket. She wants to watch the game with me. Nope, not going to turn the TV on. Amy wound up just staying at home. What are you hearing when you think about that paragraph?
I'm a father, and, it's whether you like Rod or not, whether you thought he was a good governor. I mean, as a human being, that's a hard, you know, I feel bad, especially for Amy Blagojevich. I mean, that's something, these years in prison have been very hard on the family, and that's one of the things I wanted to get across, not out of empathy or sympathy for Rod or, you know, that sort of thing, but really just sort of offering an unvarnished look at, you know, what his life has been like, you know, since he stepped in that day in 2012.
So what are his days like? What is he doing in jail?
Well, so he sort of has a routine in a lot of ways. I mean, he wakes up and he reads the Bible. He says that he's really become a lot more spiritual and religious in prison. He finds it, you know, faith comforting, and you know, this is the, you know, his faith is sort of helping sustain his, you know, Rod has sort of said from the day he was arrested until the day he walked into prison that he was innocent. This sort of, he sees himself as this helps him sustain himself, you know, these stories, you know, his faith that he will be vindicated. And he's down to his, you know, last appeal right now at the Supreme Court. So he reads the Bible in the morning. He, you know, he goes to so there's sort of three things that kind of he works on. He's sort of a loner at prison. You would think that a gregarious politician would be, you know, basically the, you know, the man around prison, but he really sticks to himself a lot, and he exercises quite a bit, and not just sort of for the sake of exercise, but, you know, he uses it as a way to sort of set personal goals, daily goals. One of the things he said that he finds is, you know, with given such a long sentence, he needs to have these, you know, these daily, weekly, monthly, you know, these goals for himself, you know, so it helps him pass the time. And so the other thing is sort of, you know, writing long letters to his family, talking to his family. That's it's a crushing to be away from his wife and kids. And then the other thing is he's writing. He's you know, he's a huge history buff, so he does a lot of reading and writing. He's working on a series of essays that I think he would like to have published or do something. He says he's writing them for his kids right now about famous people and maybe not so famous people who have really overcome adversity, and that's something that gives him meaning. That's one of the things he does is he tries to find meaning in things. And yeah. So he largely avoids, you know, things like the TV rooms and stuff like that, you know, so he really sort of focuses on himself.
Well, you know how when we write an email to our kids and they don't read the whole thing, or maybe we even write, I have texts. I've had tweets that my kids won't read, let alone texts, which can go over 140 characters. So there he is writing at first the family would visit every 4 or 5 weeks. Now they're down to about 4 times a year. And you write how he and Patty realize that he's losing touch with his daughters and they him. And he'll sometimes write them, you say, these long email, and they don't read them.
Yeah, well, he told me the story about how I forget which Christmas it was, but he spent quite a bit of time, hours and days, writing a Christmas prayer for the kids, and he really took a lot of care and thought and spent hours and hours doing this, and he sends it there, and he's talking to Patty on the phone. He's like, well, what did the kids think of the email, you know, my prayer? And they're like, oh, they said it was long. You know, it was just not the reaction he was hoping for. I mean, stuff like that. So, I mean, there's some gallows humors that he finds, but it's, you know, he talks about this in a very serious way. And I think Amy Blagojevich, you know, talked about this in open court, was just how, like, you know, that she called it, you know, her relationship with her father is becoming, in her words, superficial. It's becoming, you know, the phone call, the 15 minutes or 10 minute phone calls, and I just, you know, just aren't a substitute for being, you know, being there.
Being there. Well, so towards the end of the piece, David Bernstein's on the phone. His piece in Chicago Magazine is about Governor Rod Blagojevich. This is the first interview you've been able to read or see on Channel 5 since the governor went away. And so towards the end, you say, I asked him in an email why he did not plead guilty and cut a deal for a lesser sentence. And so let's pick it up, David, where you say, I asked him in an email why the governor didn't plead guilty and cut a deal for a lesser sentence. Does he regret that, and why didn't he?
Well, you know, he gets asked that a lot, he says, because, you know, about 90% or more of federal defendants plead at some point and take a lesser sentence or whatnot. But Rod didn't, and he told me this. He said to plead guilty to a crime that he did not believe in his heart or mind that he committed would be a betrayal of the oath that he had taken to uphold, you know, the Constitution, that sort of thing. But he also thought it would be a betrayal to his family, to himself, and that he knew that, you know, by not pleading, he would face a potentially harsher punishment.
Well, most of the people that were following, most of the people following the case, as you know, thought this dude's going down. I mean, none of us knew for sure, but I don't think we were shocked, maybe by the length of the sentence, but we weren't shocked that he was found guilty. Is he?
But, you know, it's interesting to relook at the case now, five some years later, now that the pitchforks and torches are down, and I look at the case in a little bit of a different light. I mean, I was a harsh critic of Governor Blagojevich when he was governor. I wrote a really very critical piece that the governor's office and they weren't happy with at all. It's called Mr. Unpopularity, and it was really it was very tough on Rod. And you know, I did not think he was a very good governor, but the you know, he did, and he thought that he could you know, that the trial would vindicate him. He thought that he really believed that he doesn't think he got a fair trial, and there are some issues that, you know, we talked about a little bit and some other things, but he felt like the trial would vindicate him, and that's why he wanted to go to trial and not plead.
Then why did he give you an interview if previously you, of all people, you'd been so critical of him? How did that go down?
Well, that was that was actually one of my selling points. So I had started to take interest in Rod again in 2015, in the summer of 2015, when the appellate court overturned five of his 18 counts. The five counts all dealt with the selling of the Senate seat, which were those were the bombshell counts, the ones that were going to make Abraham Lincoln roll over in his grave. And I thought, so those were overturned. So I started to say, well, wait a second, you know, what if these were overturned, then, you know, those were the big crimes. So, you know, what else is there? And it started getting me thinking about Rod again. And then, so I went to his resentencing hearing, and the judge, you know, resentenced him to the same amount. And I just really felt, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I just, you know, I just wanted to look into it. And, you know, I felt like those were the big charges, and then he was resentenced to the same thing, to the same amount of time. I thought, you know, it got me asking, does the punishment fit the crime?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I reached out to them, and actually my, you know, me being critical of them in the past, I think was for me a selling point to them. I didn't have I told them this. I said, I'm willing to listen to you. And I think they felt like no one in the media, no one in the public has really listened to them. And part of that has been Rod's own message. You know, he's been, you know, some of his antics and really, you know, obnoxious statements, and then some of the things he's done have really, you know, overshadowed in a lot of ways his legal case, which his appeal, if you actually look at some of the legal arguments in the appeal are, you know, are kind of compelling. And I'm not saying he's innocent here. I'm just saying he's got a very interesting legal case. And I think he was his own worst enemy in terms of, you know, basically stamping on his own message.
There are times in the past, and even today, even after reading your piece today, I think, well, we have to go now, David, but I wonder how tethered he is to reality sometimes. The last sentence is a quote from him: I'm not giving up on my future. You imagine he still thinks that he's going to, maybe not be president, but be something else someday. And
I think he really does believe that. I think he believes that he will. In his mind, I think he has faith that he will eventually be vindicated somehow.
Yeah.
And that he will have the series of essays that he's writing on are people who have had to overcome adversity and have had successful second acts, as he calls them. So I think in his mind he does think that there is a Blagojevich 2.0 somewhere down the line.
Imagine that. You'll find it on newsstands everywhere. You can read it online right now at chicagomag.com. David Bernstein's Blago, His Life in Prison. What a pleasure, David. Keep writing. Keep doing what you guys do over there.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, stay well. You bet. Take care.
It's you too. Bye-bye.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yep.
Here's John Williams.
Lots of big ones. In fact, I'm scheduling another one in about 40 minutes. You'll want to stick around for that. It's 2:08. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We appreciate you tuning in to WGN Radio here until 3 o'clock. Thank you, Pete McMurray, for filling in for me yesterday. I did not plan on taking the 11th of September off, but there 9/11 came and went without me in the studio. I understand that they played back our interview that we did with Carol Maureen shortly after the original event and her gripping retelling of what it was like to not only be there at that scene, but almost lose her life as the building collapsed behind her. What an epic tale. Carol Maureen and Pete McMurray replaying that yesterday. It's 2:09. On WGN Radio, you may have heard me talk a little bit about the Out of the Darkness walk that's coming here to Chicago at Grant Park. It's right around the corner. Out of the Darkness is an event that is going to try and shed light on, raise money for, and help people either avoid suicide or help families who have been victimized, if you will, by suicide. In our studio is Carol Levinson, and she is on the board in Illinois, the Illinois chapter secretary for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Carol, this is John. Let's see, I guess you knew that. We met about 4 minutes ago. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm really privileged to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, let's get the word out. It's one of those things where I think we all know that suicide is a huge problem in this country, but until you actually sit down and educate yourself a little bit about it, you don't realize what a big deal it is. Put it into some perspective for me. Who commits suicide demographically, et cetera?
Okay. Well, unfortunately, an American dies by suicide every 12 minutes. Americans have attempted to die by suicide an estimated 1.1 million times annually. The cost of suicide to our society is an estimated $51 billion annually.
I've heard that veterans commit suicide maybe disproportionate to the rest of the population.
Yeah, veterans account for about 18% or almost one in five people.
Okay, I thought it was going to be higher.
Yeah.
So one in five suicides are veterans.
One in five are veterans, which means that four in five are just ordinary citizens. And I will tell you that the issue of suicide cuts across all demographics. There is not a race or ethnic group or socioeconomic class that suicide does not touch.
Teenagers, are they vulnerable?
Very vulnerable. And in fact, in Illinois, suicide is the number one leading cause of death for ages 10 to 14. And the third leading cause of death for ages 15 to 24.
You told me off the air 1 to 44. What is
that? Yes, it is the leading cause of death for ages 1 to 44 nationally.
Suicide is?
Yes.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Yes.
You think car crashes or, I don't know, other diseases, gunshots, that sort of thing.
Right. Often gunshots are suicides.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that because here in Chicago we're so tapped in on death by gunshot, and presumably somebody murdering somebody, but it's not always the case, is it?
It's not always the case, and in fact, one of the things that is why it's so important to address the issue of gun violence is because often gun violence is self-inflicted. There are far more deaths by suicide than there are by homicide, and there are half of the suicides are by guns, firearms.
So then are you advocates for suicide prevention almost always more conservative, if you will, about gun ownership rules? Do you want to restrict that more?
No, that's not the position of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. In fact, we are partnering with the National Shooting Sports Association and on an effort to try and educate people about gun safety.
Yeah.
And that's an issue that we should all be able to agree on.
Well, maybe it's not the gun, it's the mental state of the individual. The problem isn't that they found a gun, it's that they were so distraught that they sought one out to begin with.
That's quite true. And often people, you know, they have a moment of crisis. They are already at risk because of health issues or an underlying psychiatric condition, financial things. It's a whole host of factors that can lead to a death. It's never one thing.
Do you have an informed opinion or thought about this? So one of the Fox News anchors nationally lost his job last week because of some unfortunate email and text messages that he was sharing with some colleagues.
Yes, Eric Bowling. Yeah.
So they fire him. Then a few days later, his son takes his own life. And some people are trying to make the connection one to the other. They were very close. What do you have to say about that?
I think that it's very easy to, as an outsider, to try and step in and assign blame, so to speak, for a suicide on something that is nationally known. But I think that's a big mistake. We don't know anything about this young man and whatever issues were going on with
him. So you're not blaming the father. You're not blaming the father's bosses.
No.
And I we say this all the time, but it's easier maybe to say it than to do it. I think we all know not to do that. Don't go there. It's such a personal, mysterious thing. We can't know what the motivation was for that kid.
We can't know what the motivation is, but we certainly can take steps to ensure that other young people don't make the same decision, if you will.
How do we do that?
Well, I will tell you that I have personal experience with this issue. 10 years ago, my 18-year-old daughter, Ilana, took her own life. She was had been struggling with depression for about 4 years, and she had seen many medical and psychological professionals. But at the time, she had, unbeknownst to me, taken herself off medication. And things just came together in a very bad way one night.
Would you say then, I knew that about you. Thank you for sharing that. I hope that helps people realize that you're coming at this not just as an advocate, but as a person who struggled with this. You know about what you speak. So then I wonder if there's like a series of protocols we should all follow, like get them professional help, get them on medication, monitor the medication. Is there a series of things we should be thinking about?
Well, sure, but I think the number one thing that we need to do is get rid of the stigma that surrounds mental health issues and suicide. And that's a taller order than you can believe. There are still communities and pockets of people who don't believe that suicide is anything except a rational decision, and it is anything but.
Why do you say that? Where do you hear that?
I know that I've seen, I follow social media, and there are people who, somebody yesterday, one of these celebrity types was talking about that he does not believe that there is such a thing as depression, that people who are sad should just snap out of it and get over it, and that this is very self-indulgent. And that's great for him that he has never experienced depression. Yeah. But as we know, millions and millions of people have major depression.
How do you not, or maybe should I care that that person defined it as self-indulgent? I mean, it is a selfish act, isn't it?
How do you come? I don't understand.
I'm quoting
it that way.
Well, because I'll finish that thought and tell me what's wrong with it. Because you know this is going to harm other people.
At the time that people take their own life, they are not logical. They are not thinking. They actually many times believe that they are helping the people of their family. They are doing them a favor, that it is too difficult to, that they are too difficult to live with. Mm. So, no, I don't think most people who are dying don't see it as an act of revenge. They don't see it as a final message. Most people who take their lives are in such incredible pain. One of the people that who is very involved in suicide survivor support is Father Charles Ruby, who's at Catholic Charities. And one of the things that, because he was someone who helped counsel my husband and I when our daughter died, and one of the things he said is, as horrible as you feel right now with this death, and we were devastated. There were times we couldn't see how we could get up in the morning.
Yeah.
That the person who, your daughter, was suffering 1,000 times more. So if you put it in that context, all of the negative things that people say about people are
maybe
wrong.
It's self-indulgent to presume to know what that who the hell do you think you are that you know what the, and you know what I'm thinking of is Robin Williams too, described as a person who had everything to live for, every positive thing in the world, but was in such extraordinary pain, evidently, that he could not bear it anymore.
Right. Well, one of the it's sort of cliche, but it's so true, is that you are sad, okay, when something awful happens. You are depressed when everything is going great. So, you know, you can be that the idea of everything to live for, again, is one of those outsiders trying to put a framework on something that is very complex.
You're telling me that's the range in which some of these people live, that it's that depressing or difficult, people who struggle with the impulse?
I will tell you that a woman that I knew very well revealed to me after Ilana died that she had attempted to take her own life when she was young. And she thankfully did not complete the suicide. She was saved. She said her life is like walking along a stream that goes on for a very, very long time. But instead of looking forward, she has to always look down so that she avoids tripping on the little rocks that are in her way. And that, to me, was a beautiful description and a heartbreaking one for what it's like to live with a chronic mental illness.
Are you hopeful that medication is the solution and that we'll find the right cocktail of things, therapies, I don't know what?
For some people, medications alone are helpful. For others, they need both medications and psychological counseling.
I'm talking about suicide prevention right
now. Yes, but there's some really exciting research that is being done, in part funded by AFSP, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, which is pointing to the brain science, because this is really a brain issue. You know, the early Greeks, they made this artificial division between the mental and the physical, but really everything about the brain is physical, and suicide is about a damaged or a brain that is not working the way it should be. So I'm hopeful that eventually through research we may have a combination of medicine, or it may be something external, to change the way the structure and chemistry of the brain works.
Yeah, it's that way with all mental illnesses, isn't it? That if I break my arm, you see the cast, you see the bruise, you see the bone. If I have a mental problem, something's troubling me. We can't see it. We can't recognize it.
That's
alone
right.
This, begin to know how to fix it.
This is one of those invisible disabilities. So, yes, and people, more people than you can believe, struggle with mental illness, and more people than you can believe also have a suicide story somewhere in their background. If we live long enough, we will. 60% of us will know someone who dies by suicide.
No, the statistic you hit me with at the beginning of this conversation startled me more than I let on. You said over 1 million suicide attempts?
Annually, yes.
Annually. Well, there's only 300 million of us. I mean, that's 1 in 300 right there.
Right. And obviously, there's some people who engage in multiple attempts.
WGN with Kara Levinson. She's the secretary of the Illinois chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. The big walk is coming up On the 23rd, we're going to be at Grant Park. You can register starting at 9 a.m. and walk at 11 a.m. You don't have to come in with a bucket of money. They will take what money you can donate or generate, but they'd like to see you in person there walking at Grant Park. And, boy, if it's anything like it's been lately, it's just going to be a great walk to come out of the darkness and into the light. Details at chicagowalk.org, chicagowalk.org. If I think that somebody I know, if I feel like I'm susceptible to the impulse of suicide, then what should be the first thing somebody does?
Talk. Find somebody to tell. We have a program, AFSP does, and we do training on it. The program is called Talk Saves Lives. People have the misguided notion that if you talk about suicide, if you ask someone if they are suicidal, that you will somehow trigger them to think of suicide. And studies have shown that that's actually far from true, that in fact people will be relieved to have the opportunity to talk about their feelings.
Well, there was a story in the news a few weeks ago that I'm sure you've been following as well, of that young girl, teenager, who was counseling the teenage boy who was distraught. She at first tried to counsel him, but then sort of goaded him into committing suicide.
Yeah, that's
an exception.
I sure hope so. Yeah. I think part of the reason why it got such airplay is because it was such a horrific thing. But I think most teenagers can learn that they are often the first line of defense against suicide, and they can tell someone.
Boy, that's interesting, isn't it? If you have teenagers in your world, even if they're not struggling with this, maybe another teenager will reveal that to them.
Right. And
so let's arm our kids.
Exactly. And they won't go to their family, or they won't go to a teacher,
right,
because they won't understand, or they're afraid of being, poo-pooed. But teenagers understand other teenagers. And we are also working on trying to encourage peers tell someone, encourage them to seek help, be the person. Assume that you're the only person that teenager has gone to, and get them help. And by the way, if the help you get is not appropriate, it's not helping you, find other help.
Yeah, don't give up. Don't quit. Okay, the walk is September 23rd, 11 a.m. at Grant Park. It's actually at RV Field, A-R-V-E-Y, RV Field in Grant Park, which is on the southern edge of Grant Park.
The very southern end. And we usually have at least 5,000 people turning out. And we walk along the lakefront, and even if it rains, it's a beautiful day and a beautiful walk.
This seems trivial, but there it is. You also have a silent auction, which, by the way, is just a great way for you to either pick up some swell fun stuff, but also to generate money for the cause.
Exactly.
So chicagowalk.org, chicagowalk.org, if you forget to go there. But remember, September 23rd, 9 a.m. register, 11 a.m. walk at Grant Park, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. The Illinois chapter is behind it.
And I just want to make one small correction. So 44,000, more than 44,000 Americans die by suicide each year. And in Illinois, it is the leading cause of death for ages 10 to 14, but it is in the nation, it is the second leading cause of death for ages 1 to 44, so second.
So as opposed to first. A small consolation, it's a startling statistic, so thank you for correcting that, and thank you for coming into our studio.
It was truly my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Kara, I think you've done some real good here today. Stan Panionovich is in the studio now.
Yeah.
Well, he thinks that's important because he believes we're dissing him earlier in the show.
I just asked where the fella was from, and I think you told me the South Side. What could be
I know he's
wrong
a big White
that?
Sox fan.
Yeah.
And I know the Cubs aren't his first team.
This is nice. He'll be on the air with you when they lose this afternoon.
I mean, they're rebuilding. It's expected.
The White Sox or the Cubs we're talking about now?
White Sox are rebuilding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm for them losing. Keep losing.
Right, you actually want to see them get a draft pick.
Right, it's sort of like what the Cubs did.
That works with basketball.
Football.
That works with football, but that really doesn't work with baseball, does it?
Well, it worked for the Royals. They rebuilt, won a World Series. It worked for the Cubs. Rebuilt, won a World Series.
Not so much through draft choices, I guess.
But it's not like, oh my God, we just got the first pick in the college draft, in the NBA draft. That can be a game changer.
Yes.
You get a Kyrie Irving, and now you've got something.
It worked for the Blackhawks, too. They ended up with Patrick Kane, Jonathan Taves. But as you guys both know, it's not just draft picks. You have to make, you know, fluid free agent signings. With the Hawks, it was Marian Hossa. With the Cubs, John Lester, Jason Hayward. And then you have to make crucial trades. And the Cubs did that, acquiring Jake Arrieta. A masterful trade, fleecing the Orioles, a bunch of other trades that helped them out. So it's not just the picks. You have to also, you know, formulate a roster in a multitude of different ways.
You came in here to talk football with me, as you will on Mondays after the weekend's games, for a reason we'll make clear in a minute. But since we're talking baseball right now, though, what's happening with the Cubs?
Well, everything's fine. I mean, they're just giving rings away, you know, so everything's going to be all right.
Okay. Okay,
they lost. No, okay, seriously. They had a 5-game lead, and we talked on Friday. I was in this seat on Friday. And you asked what I thought about the weekend series. And if you remember, I said, just don't get swept. Because you had a 5-game lead.
And I said, swept, you're supposed to take 2 out of 3 at home.
And they lose 3 in a row to a division rival. You know, Milwaukee's now only 2.5 back. The Cardinals are 2 back.
What did we score, 4 runs over the weekend?
It was ugly, man. It was not a pretty series, that's for sure. And
3?
Now you've got 7 games left against the Cardinals and 4 more against the Brewers. So those 11 games will decide the division.
God, can you imagine if here in the last month we give it away? I mean, Lord, we're the defending World Series champions. We're the Chicago freaking Cubs. And we're about to hand it to the Brewers, for crying out loud.
The Cardinals this weekend, too. You'll face Martinez on Friday, Waka on Saturday, Lance Lynn on Sunday. Those are their best 3 pitchers.
Waka?
Waka, waka, waka. Not waka, faka, not waka, faka, flame, or waka, flaka, flame, or whatever his name is.
So you posted this. The Chicago Cubs today announced that Jeannie Dietz, a resident of Wilmette, former game day usher for 10 seasons, how nice is that, and a lifelong Cubs fan, won the Cubs Charities World Series ring raffle, ironically, from more than 25,000 raffle tickets sold. I believe at $10 each. They raised $2.5 million.
Lots of cash.
Wow, minus the cost of the ring, maybe, but anyway.
Which is 70 grand.
Ironically, for more than 25,000 tickets sold, Dietz's randomly selected winning ticket
ironically
number,
and randomly in the same sentence,
was 001907, 1907, the winning number corresponding with the year of the team's first World Series championship. Wow. How great, is awesome, cool is that?
It's great. You could have done it in May. You could have done it in June, maybe July during the All-Star break. I just find the timing of it, I'm
when did they know? When did they draw that thing?
They drew it on September 5th.
Okay,
and they waited, and they waited 6 days to announce it, which was ironically enough and randomly enough after a 3-game sweep.
Why
to
aren't
put you only
enjoying
2 games
that? Why are you poo-pooing that?
They have ruined rings for me. I mean, they've given almost 2,000 World Series rings away. And they hijacked the trade deadline on the 31st of July to announce the Bartman ring. And here they are after a 3-game sweep at home announcing another ring to give away.
This text is just poured in. It says, the Cubs, hold on a second, I want to make sure I read this correctly. The Cubs definitely picked the raffle number. There's no coincidence like that.
Wow. I would agree with that. But
wow.
Look, I'm okay with the ring thing. I'm okay with the charities, of course, and I understand representing your brand. But it's this constant cry for relevance in what has been a disappointing season, in my opinion. You could have done all this stuff early in the season. Like when the Blackhawks, for example, when they win a Stanley Cup, everybody on the team gets a day with it in the summer. The coaches get a day with it.
Off season.
And then the very last image you have before the puck drops is Jonathan Toews bringing the cup back on the ice before the puck drop of game number one, and you don't hear about it for the rest of the season.
Been there, done that. Thank you for the trophy. Now let's go get another one.
And the Cubs constantly have to remind you that they've won the World Series.
Well, the Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup all the time. The Cubs hadn't in 100 and some years, so maybe, I'm not arguing with you, Sam, I'm just trying to figure it out. I think you're actually making a very good point here.
It just, and I've talked to some Cub fans, too, and they, you know, snap back at me and say, when's my ring coming?
Yeah.
Where's my net?
Okay, fine. By the way, just one other baseball note. It's been very streaky lately. The Cleveland Indians, Cochran was playing the play-by-play call of the 19th consecutive win last night on Cochran's show this morning. Steve wasn't happy with the call. 19 wins in a row.
It's crazy.
Holy cow.
You can't mess around and win 19
in a row. I've been thinking I don't want to play the Dodgers or Nationals. I don't want to play Cleveland in the series. That's
especially
terrible.
After they came back and beat Cleveland. Cleveland had a 3-1 lead in the World Series, and Cubs rattled off three in a row.
Boy, it would be fun to have a repeat, though.
It would be nice. You don't see it in baseball ever.
No, it's tough to repeat. We're proving that, but Cleveland might actually be in a pretty good position right now.
Cleveland's the favorite right now in the American League. In the National League, despite losing 11 in a row and 16 of 17, the Dodgers are still the favorite there. But and look, you guys could say, where is he from? He's from the South Side. I still think if the Cubs get in, they can win.
Is LA just throwing games because they don't need any more wins?
I don't think it's on purpose. No, I don't believe that's the case.
I mean, God, that's got to suck for the manager. Going, what am I doing wrong?
I think, and I'm a math guy, you know this, it's a little bit of regression to the mean. I mean, they had played so well for the first 3 or 4 months of the season. At one point, I want to say they were 91-38.
Well, the Cubs did that towards the middle of last season. I mean, they started out 25-8 or whatever it was, and then they played more normal ball for a while.
Yeah.
Talk to me about your picks. First of all, you're in this gambling thing in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. What is it called again?
The Westgate Super Contest.
You need to pick each week 5 games.
5 games against the spread.
5 games you're so confident in that you will put money on those.
I was confident. Well, I didn't put money on them. You have like an entry fee to get in, which Oddshark sponsored me for, and I have to just pick 5 games. I don't have to put money down on them. I just have to aggregately pick 5 a week times 17 weeks.
So 5 games that you're so confident in that you say, okay, these are my best picks.
I was confident in 4 last week, and you helped me with the 5th one.
What? I helped you with the Houston pick.
Well, I flipped on you, though.
So Houston, who did the...
Houston played the Jaguars and got crushed.
Houston played the Jaguars and got crushed. Houston lost by a lot. I told you to take Houston in the points because everybody's going to be pumped for Houston. You can't vote against Houston.
And I'm au contraire, very contrarian.
And so you're sitting in here and you go, okay, John, all right, I'm going with you, man. We're in this together. And then what did you do?
I flipped on you.
Yeah.
But we are in 135th place out of 2,700 entries.
Okay.
You and I, you and me.
Thanks to my guidance. That is, I told you and you knew to do the opposite.
You told me before we started this to take your advice and go the other way. So essentially, I did what you told me to do.
It pays up to 134, right?
Yeah, probably.
It pays up to 100.
Really, I mean, I'm sorry. I was hoping we'd be in the double digits. We're in the triple digits. We're 100 and something.
I'm sorry. I'll do better next week.
So 3-1-1. 3 games you got right.
Got the Bears right, too.
1 game you got wrong, and then
Tennessee.
One you actually picked
the
spread.
And then last night, it was Denver and the Chargers. The Chargers were down by 3, getting 3. They were kicking a field goal to send it in overtime. The kick got blocked. They lost by 3. If you tie, you get a half point. So we have 3.5 points. 3 for 3 wins, and then the half point for the tie.
So 3.5 points out of 5.
Yes.
Well, and the first week, so the most you could have is 5. We're at 3.5.
9 people went 5-0.
I guess if that's all?
9.
Are you kidding me?
That's it.
Okay, so if we go 5-0 next week,
we'll be in first.
I get the feeling we're right in the thick of things.
We'll be in first if we go 5-0.
Well, let's do that.
Hey, baby, just keep giving me the picks, and then we'll sauce them up, and then we'll flip them.
We'll sauce them up and flip them. Okay, so we had Houston, correct. You had the Bears, correct.
We had the Bears, correct. Jacksonville, correct. We also had Minnesota. They crushed New Orleans on Monday night.
Wow, the Vikings look good last night.
Their defense plays. It's a good defense.
And all of a sudden, Bradford's a quarterback.
Look good.
Smokes. And then which game did we get wrong?
We got the Tennessee Titans wrong.
Yeah.
They lost to the Raiders, and then we tied the Chargers. But now I like to take the overreactions from week one and flip those. So teams that looked really good in week one, I think the NFL is strong with parity. And teams that look really good 1 week, the bottom falls off the next week. So okay, we have to find those spots in week two.
Okay, and we'll hear your picks.
Saturday.
On our Saturday morning show. And one last thing about the Bears.
Yes. They just placed Terrell Freeman on injured reserve, by the way. He's their middle linebacker.
Yeah.
Not good.
Were you, did how close they came to winning it make the loss better or worse?
Worse. They should have won that game.
Yeah, 4-2 drop touchdown passes.
And the worst play, too, the play that changed the game was that 88-yard touchdown when they let Austin Hooper, the tight end, just run down Main Street. Nobody covered him. A defensive collapse. I guess the coaches sent one play in. The defense did it a different way. And that was the difference in the game. It was 3rd and 6. You had them against their own end zone. And they throw the 88-yard touchdown bomb. That changed everything. even despite that play, though, you still had two chances to win, like you said, on that final drive. So it doesn't make it easier. It's win or lose. Did you win? Did you lose?
The coaching staff probably had the worst night of their lives, tossing and turning last night, thinking, I could have done this. We could have run a play. We could have tried to punch it in. I don't know what they think, but boy, they had four chances. What a shame. But are you at least heartened by Mike Lennon's performance?
I think he did okay. He did enough to not lose. He didn't do enough to win, though. Does that make sense?
I don't know. Somebody was writing, would a different quarterback have won? And I thought, what's he supposed to do? Catch the ball, too? Oh, I sound like Tom Brady's wife. I mean, he did, in the second half, he looked great. And in that last drive, he did anything and everything a quarterback can do.
He did everything that they've expected him to do. Don't turn the ball over and keep them in the game. That's been the game plan from Mike Lennon from day one. Don't turn it over. Keep us in the game. And that's exactly what he did. The Bears had a puncher's chance. Just couldn't catch the ball in the end zone twice.
Sam, anything else you want to tell us about in the world of sports we should be paying attention to?
I don't have much else, actually. I think I'm tapped out here. Go Cubs, go. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Now, if they give away a ring after they get bounced, is that okay? Because they're still the champs until they're not the champs, right?
Sam Panayanovich from WGN Sports. You'll hear him Saturday morning on my show and on the weekend as well. Nice to talk to you, Sam.
Good to see you.
By the way, so it seemed to me, before Sam, you leave, you were talking about the fact that the winning raffle number and the Cubs World Series ring was the same year as they last won the World Series.
Randomly. It was random, right?
It's 1907?
Was the first one, yes.
And then they also won it in 1908.
They went back to back.
Oh, I see. That was the confusion. Some folks were saying, no, last year they did it was 08, but they had also won it in 07, right? Anyway.
I just wanted to read two texts real quick, back to back.
Okay.
708, kudos to Sam for calling them out. 847, I hate this guy.
That's why I don't read the text.
Back and forth.
You know, the best you can do is come out even.
Back and forth. I love it.
By the way, the I hate this guy was probably about me. But then it seemed to me like I remembered some other coincidences about the Cubs the year they won the World Series, you know, in 16, which was 108 years.
Right.
There are 108 stitches in a baseball. I'm looking from Snopes, but they say they're verifying these. Left and right field corners at Wrigley Field are 108 meters from home plate. The Ricketts family, which owns the Cub, has located their main business, TD Ameritrade, on 108th Street in Omaha, Nebraska. 108 is a sacred number in yoga. You can just see how 108, that boy, if you had to pick a year, you would have picked 108. And it goes on like this. 10-8, October 8th, 1945, 108, Billy Goat Tavern owner Sam William Sianis, a place to curse on the Cubs for not letting his goat in Wrigley Field 108 years previous.
I saw the goat. Well, not the goat. I think it's the grandson of the goat. The real goat I don't think is around anymore.
The Cubs win the World Series in the 1990 J.J. Abrams film Taking Care of Business, which is 108 minutes long. The Cubs win the World Series in the 1989 film Back to the Future Part 2, 108 minutes long. So we
have crazy coincidences.
I don't know if we had. Are there any 109s or ones? I guess would be the new operative number for us.
Just play better baseball and things will take care of itself.
Oh, well, that's an option too, then, isn't it? I hadn't actually thought about that as an option. All right, Sam, now I am done with you. Thank you for coming into our studio.